When Nathan reached the place where Barkley and the Harrells had parted company, he spied a single set of tracks leading south.
I may be wrong, Cotton Blossom, but I'd bet my saddle Clint Barkley and the Harrells have split the blanket. It's about time the chicken-livered varmint quit hiding behind the Harrells.
Nathan estimated Barkley had not more than a 3-hour start, which meant he wouldn't catch up with the outlaw before dark. Barkley might double back and attempt an ambush, but with Cotton Blossom scouting ahead, Nathan had only to stay out of rifle range. An hour before sundown, Nathan reined up beside a spring. He unsaddled and ate a quick supper, sharing the meal with Cotton Blossom. Near where the horses were cropping grass, he stretched out, his head on his saddle.
Cotton Blossom, I'm counting on you. He may come after us.
Nathan dozed, and when he suddenly awoke, he wasn't sure what had disturbed him. In the starlight, the horses stood with heads raised. Cotton Blossom slipped silently into the shadows. Nathan lay still, hardly daring to breathe, aware that at any moment he might draw fire. Nathan rolled away from his saddle barely seconds before slugs tore into the ground where he'd been lying. He sprang to his feet and went after the bushwhacker. Having nothing to guide him, Nathan took refuge behind the trunk of a huge pine. It was a risky situation. He didn't know where the gunman was. But again, Cotton Blossom served him well. One slug whipped past Nathan's ear and another tore into his left thigh. Nathan fired at the muzzle flash. Placing his hand on Cotton Blossom's head, Nathan felt a gash that still oozed blood. The dog had been struck with the muzzle of a Colt. Nathan's own wound was bleeding, and he could feel the blood running into his boot. He limped toward the now quiet shadows. He lit a match and found Clint Barkley's body. He had been shot twice.
Captain Sage Jennings, this yellow-bellied back-shooting coyote could die 100 times and wouldn't even the score. But it's all I can do, muy bueno, compañero.
Returning to the spring, Nathan kindled a small fire and put on water to boil. Taking strips of clean muslin from his pack, he tied a strip above his wound. When the water began to boil, he soaked some of the muslin and washed the dried blood from Cotton Blossom's head wound, then soaked clean cloth in disinfectant and placed it over the wound.
Lie down and keep that in place so the medicine can do its work.
Nathan then cleansed his own wound. The lead had missed the bone, but there was a ragged exit wound that continued bleeding. He applied a heavy coat of mud to the bleeding wound and wrapped it tight with muslin.
We'll ride out at first light, Cotton Blossom. I reckon we're still a long way from El Paso, and I'm needing a doctor.
When Nathan awoke, he knew he had made a mistake. He should have ridden all night, for his leg was stiff, swollen, and so painful he could barely stand. Cotton Blossom's wound wasn't as serious as Nathan had at first thought. His own wound, however, was a different story, and he could feel the fever engulfing him. He removed from his pack a quart bottle almost full of whiskey and, hating the stuff, downed as much of it as he could stand. With difficulty, he loaded the pack horse and saddled the Grulla. He rode south, and it seemed unseasonably hot, but it was the fever. And although Nathan had consumed most of the whiskey, it seemed only to have made him drunk. Near sundown, he decided to rest near a fast-running creek. His wounded leg wouldn't support his weight, and having drunk most of a quart of whiskey, Nathan fell. The sun dipped below the horizon, and twilight came. The horses cropped grass while an anxious Cotton Blossom waited. But as the first stars winked silver from a deep purple plateau, Nathan Stone lay unmoving. Far into the night, Nathan awoke, his teeth chattering. His head throbbed. He crawled to his horse and, seizing a stirrup leather, managed to get to his feet. His head reeling, he managed to get into the saddle, knowing he must ride on. Myra Wells found life difficult on the New Mexico hardscrabble farm where she and her daughter and son had settled. It was better than the destitution that faced them after her husband died. Jubal Wells had offered to take them in if Myra would be his woman. For the sake of Ellie and Jamie, she'd agreed and started using his last name. But Wells was a hard-drinking, horse-thieving, violently bad example of a man. And when he wasn't around, some of his habits of laziness seemed to have rubbed off on his stepson.
Damn it.
Jamie! I'll milk the cows, Ma, but it's Jamie's job to feed the horses. I whacked him on the head, but he wouldn't get up, and he cussed at me.
I'll tend to him.
Ma! There's two horses back of the barn. One's carrying a pack, and a man's riding the other. He's all slumped over like he's asleep or sick. There's a dog with him, and he growled at me.
Stay here, Ellie, while I wake Jamie. Turn the ham when it's ready, and don't let the biscuits burn.
The door to Jamie's room consisted only of a feed sack curtain, and Myra peeked in. Her son was in bed, the blankets over his head. She let him know it was time to start the day.
Stop. Damn it all to hell, Ma. I ain't got no nightshirt on.
Ow! Get up!
Damn it, Ma!
Ma!
Ma! Get her out of here!
Ellie, I told you to tend the ham.
The ham's done. I took it off the stove.
Jamie, we'll leave you alone, but get dressed quickly. There's a stranger over at the barn, perhaps sick or hurt. We may need your help.
All right.
The three of them cautiously approached the figure behind the barn. The two horses stood with their heads down, while Nathan Stone slumped over the saddle horn.
He's been hurt. Ellie, loose his feet from the stirrups. Jamie, you help me get him off the horse. Ugh. Oh, we gotta get him to the house. Jamie, you take his feet.
Pa's gonna raise hell.
He's been hurt. Helping him is the Christian thing to do.
There's nothing Christian about Pa. Or that no account Ike Puckett and Levi Odell that he rides with.
He's awful heavy, Ma. Let's put him down and rest a minute.
No, we can make it into the house. We'll put him on my bed.
It's near time Pa was getting back.
I'm aware of that. Jamie, those horses must be exhausted. Unsaddle them, rub them down, and water them. Install them with our horses in the barn. Ellie, I'll need you to help me.
Myra started to unbuckle Nathan's gun belt, only to have him seize both her hands. She found herself looking into cold blue eyes that sent chills up her spine.
I'm gonna see to your wound, and the gun belt must be removed. I'll hang it on the bedpost where you can reach it.
She thought the hard blue eyes softened just a little. They closed again, and he let go of her wrists.
You're taking off his trousers?
I am. You don't have to watch.
I'll take off his boots. Lord, Ma, that wound looks awful.
Awful enough that he could lose that leg, if not his life. I only hope Jubal hasn't drunk up all the whiskey on the place.
There's most of a jug. Last time he passed out, I hit it. When he come to his senses, he thought he'd drunk it all.
Get it. This man may need all of it.
Though Myra forced whiskey down Nathan all that day and far into the night, the fever wouldn't let him go. Finally, 2 or 3 hours shy of first light on the second day, Nathan began to sweat. Myra dozed until the first gray light of dawn crept through the window. She rubbed the sleep from her eyes as Cotton Blossom peeked around the curtain, only his head visible.
You can come in. You're a faithful one. Make yourself at home.
Cotton Blossom.
He's been concerned about you. And well, he should have been. I've been pouring whiskey down you since early yesterday morning.
Oh, I'm obliged, ma'am. Where am I?
In my damn bed. By God, somebody's got some talking to do.
Jubal Wells had come home. Cotton Blossom was the first to react to Jubal's hostility. The dog moved to stand beside the bed.
Cotton Blossom, sorry. He didn't like the sound of your voice.
And I don't like some damn drifter and his fool dog squatting in my house with my woman when I ain't here.
Jubal, he's been hurt and would have died without attention.
Woman, there's some settling to be done. But for now, there's a use for you. I can leave Ire here, and we ain't had no grub for 2 days. Get in the kitchen.
Nathan turned away, and Myra sat with her face in her hands.
I'm sorry to be the cause of your trouble, ma'am. You go ahead and do what you have to do. I'll get up and get out of here.
You'll stay where you are till you're able to be up and about. I've done no wrong.
Myra left him there, and he could hear her in the kitchen. Soon there was the aroma of frying ham, and Nathan felt the pangs of hunger gnawing at him. He wondered where Jubal had gone, and guessed that he and his friends were unsaddling their horses. The woman returned with a tin cup of hot coffee and a platter of fried ham and eggs. She brought a bowl with an assortment of ham scraps for Cotton Blossom.
You need food.
I do, but this is a bad time for you, Mrs.
Wells. Myra Wells.
I'm Nathan Stone. Until I'm able to ride, I'll stay in the barn. I won't go on taking you in your husband's bed.
He's not my husband, and I'm through sharing this bed or any other with him. My husband's dead, and Jubal took us in, me and my two children, when we were destitute.
You have no family, then?
My parents live in Ohio, and I can't go back. I ran away when I was just 14, married my husband, and we came west.
Ma, I'm fixing breakfast for Jamie and me before they come to the house.
Please do. That is Ellie. She's barely 15, and Jamie's 13.
That's none of my business, but are you ranching or farming?
Neither. Jubal, along with Ike Puckett and Levi Odell, claim to be buying and selling horses. I believe they're stealing and selling horses.
Well, that's a serious charge. Folks have died for less.
Jamie? Ellie? This is Mr. Stone.
My pleasure, Jamie and Ellie. My friends call me Nathan. This is Cotton Blossom.
That's a funny name for a dog.
Well, I inherited him. By then, he was used to it.
I have work to do in the kitchen.
Ma, do you want me to help?
No, I want you and Jamie to stay here and talk to Mr. Stone until Jubal and his friends have had breakfast.
Jubal Wells had his suspicions about the man in the house, and when he reached the barn, he had a serious conversation with Ira Puckett and Levi Odell.
Hell, it's your house and your woman. Throw the varmint out!
That didn't strike me as being such a good idea. This hombre ain't just a down-at-the-heels drifter. There's a brace of colts hanging on the bedpost. Now, he's been shot and is likely still weak, but when he looked at me, he was purely taking my measure. He could be some kind of lawman.
Let's have a look at his saddle and saddlebags.
The trio wasted no time in going through Nathan's saddlebags and pack, still secured to the pack saddle. They found the leather bags full of gold double
Look
eagles.
Here. Oh, God almighty! There must be near 4,000 here. While this pelican's laid up, we'd have time to get to Arizona or even California.
Don't be a damn fool. We got a sweet setup right here. And I ain't one to outlaw myself for a handful of coin.
You reckon horse stealing won't outlaw you?
Maybe, but there's a matter of proof. Not so with this cold-eyed Jasper with a brace of colts. He's the kind who'd track you down, gun you down, and when he's taking his gold off your cold carcass, consider it proof enough.
You're scared of him.
Hell, so am I. Look at all this.
From Nathan's pack, he took copies of newspapers. Some of them had accounts of Nathan's days with the Kansas Pacific and of the deadly showdown with El Gato's renegades in Indian Territory. There were references to Byron Silver and the Attorney General's office in Washington, and finally, the death notice of Ranger Captain Sage Jennings. Then there were copies of various telegrams Nathan had received, several of them from Captain Ferguson at Fort Worth.
Exactly what I was afraid of, damn it. Right here amongst us, we got some kind of special lawman. We can't just salt the bastard down and then reckon he'll be forgot. Kill him, and he'll be missed. That's just what we need. Some U.S. Marshal from El Paso or Santa Fe looking for him, and looking at us.
So what are we gonna do? Let him squat here until he heals and hope he rides on? What about your woman?
There'll be other women. Unless I'm behind bars or at the business end of a rope. The less this legal coyote sees of us, the better. We'll eat right south. We'll hole up and see at Edwara's until we're ready to run a new herd of broomtails across the border.
Back inside, Nathan was passing the time with Myra's children as they petted Cotton Blossom, who enjoyed the attention.
Jamie, do you and Ellie like New Mexico?
I ain't like nowhere we've been since my pa was killed. At first, I liked it here, because there wasn't no school, but there's nothing else here either.
It wasn't so bad, even here, if it wasn't for him. When he's here, he's nearly always drunk. The worst times are when he has Ira and Levi with him, and all of them are drunk together.
If I had a gun, I'd wait till they passed out and kill them all.
Whoa. Well, killing is serious business. When you begin using a gun, you're forced to carry one to stay alive. I am forever defending myself against men who are determined to kill me.
Why do they want to kill you?
To prove they're faster on the draw than I am. Or they want me dead because I've been forced to kill friends or kin of theirs.
That's how you got hurt, then?
Well, not this time. A friend of mine was shot in the back. I went after the outlaw who did it, and when it came to a showdown, he shot me before I shot him.
But you didn't shoot him in the leg.
No.
Damnation, woman, where's our breakfast? We got riding to do.
He ain't all that drunk, and they never ride out the same day they come in. They're up to something.
The trio had taken entirely too much time unsaddling, if that was what they'd been doing. Facing Nathan, Wells had been predictably hostile. Now his attitude seemed to have changed abruptly, and the trio was anxious to be on their way.
Jamie, you and Ellie had best leave me alone. I need to get up.
But Ma said you shouldn't. Besides, she told us to stay here with you until they finish their breakfast, and they ain't finished.
And then close your eyes, because I'm getting out of this bed.
You can't scare her. She helped Ma take your britches off.
Jamie?
Nathan flung back the covers and got shakily to his feet. His wound hurt, but there had been some healing, and he could stand. When he was dressed, he buckled on his Colts. There obviously was no way out of the bedroom except through the kitchen, so Nathan waited, listening. But there was no sound except the rattle of dishes. Whatever the trio had in mind, they had discussed it before coming into the house. When the meal was over, the men pushed away from the table. When he was sure they'd gone outside, Nathan pushed aside the curtain and stepped into the kitchen.
You shouldn't have gotten up. They're leaving again.
A mite sudden and cause for me to wonder why. I aim to see them on their way.
When Jubal and his companions came out of the barn, they saw Nathan standing there, thumbs hooked in his pistol belt. The trio froze.
You hombres are in an almighty hurry to be gone, and I just want to be sure you don't make the mistake of taking something that's not yours.
We ain't taking nothing of yours, and you got no call to come out here like the bull of the woods. By God, there's three of us.
I can count, and I've been to skunk shoots before. Mount up and ride out, and if I find cause to come after you, I'll kill the three of you.
Nathan waited until he was sure they were gone, and then carefully examined his saddlebags and pack. He didn't doubt they'd been through his belongings, for nothing had been repacked as neatly as he had left it. But nothing was missing. They had to have found the bags of Double Eagles, and that puzzled him.
I believe they thought you were a lawman.
They seemed mighty anxious to get away from here, but you could be right. Maybe I was looking at the wrong reason.
Perhaps you were right and I was wrong, and your confronting them led to a change in their plans. I don't know what you have that would have interested them. Jamie unsaddled your horses and stored all your goods in the tack room. None of us bothered anything, but I could never say the same for Jubal and his friends.
They had already gone through my packs before they came to the house for breakfast. I'm not a lawman, but I have worked with the law on occasion, and in my pack there are some newspaper accounts.
That's why they were in such a hurry to ride out. After they went to the barn to unsettle their horses, Jubal never mentioned you again. Always following his trips to El Paso, he's questioned me, wanting to know if riders have been here. I believe he's ridden away for the last time.
Then you can't stay here. How many horses do you have?
Jubal kept six. I believe three of them were left here for relays, in case Jubal, Ira, and Levi had to outride a posse.
I'll be riding on to El Paso. Why don't you plan on taking Jamie and Ellie and coming with me?
That would be the sensible thing to do. I'm ashamed of myself for having sunk this low for a roof over our heads and food. I was a fool to take Jubal Wells' name for myself and my children. My husband's name was James Haight, and I think Haight will be our name from now on.
With Wells out of the picture, Nathan looked at Myra Haight. She had brown eyes and dark hair without a streak of gray. She couldn't have been a day over 30, if that, and he found himself attracted to her. He had no idea what she thought of him beyond the fact that he'd been hurt and had needed help. Myra wasted no time in telling Jamie and Ellie what she intended to do.
I'm glad, but what will we do in El Paso?
I'll find a job.
You'll go back to school.
Damn.
I hear El Paso's a right smart of a town. Why not just wait until you get there? I'll help you get settled.
Jiminy, are you gonna live with us? After Ma sleeping with old Jubal nigh 3 years, you'll be...
Jamie, go outside and stay there until I tell you to come in.
Come on, Jamie.
Myra's face flamed red and she turned away from Nathan.
I think Cot Blossom and me will sleep in the barn tonight. I'd not be surprised if Wells and his friend sneaked back and tried to take those other three horses.
Surely not. It'll be cold tonight and you're still not well. You have no business staying out there.
I have plenty of blankets.
Whatever you think is best.
Nathan was slow in climbing the ladder to the hayloft, for his wound still pained him. Cotton Blossom settled down near the foot of the ladder. Nathan had slept so much during the past several nights, he now lay awake, thinking. What was he going to do with Myra, Jamie, and Ellie once they reached El Paso? Tawdry as it seemed, he could see how a woman with two children might have cast her lot with Jubal Wells. Life on the frontier had to be hell on a woman, even with a man beside her. What must it be like when she was alone?
Identify yourself. You're covered.
It's Myra. Don't bite me, Cotton Blossom.
She stood at the top of the ladder, looking down at the place Nathan had made for himself.
You didn't have to sleep in the barn. Jamie and Ellie already regard me as a fallen woman. As Jamie was about to point out, anything you could have done would have lifted me higher than I've been for the past 3 years.
The past 3 years are exactly what you called them. They're in the past. You should leave them there.
You're a strange man, Nathan Stone. You're a gentleman, and I'm not used to that.
That being the case, I should ask you to sit. There's a cold wind coming in under the eaves.
She moved to a place beside him in the cramped space of the loft.
I noticed. I'm only wearing a nightdress. If I'd fumbled around in the dark, I'd have wakened Jamie and Ellie.
I'd bet my saddle they're awake right now. They will be until you're in your bed. And you better be going.
I'm not ready to go. Besides, I doubt they could think any less of me than they do already. How's your wound?
Sore. And you leaning on it's not helping.
Sorry. I'll move around to the other side. Will you share your blankets?
I reckon, if you don't value your reputation.
Nathan, after all I've done, am I still worthy of a decent man?
Let's turn that around. I reckon you'll have to look long and hard to find a decent man worthy of you. Most men don't want a decent woman. That's why in every town west of the Mississippi, the second building to go up is a whorehouse.
What's the first?
A saloon.
That's strange. Why the saloon first?
So men can get drunk enough to go to the whorehouse.
Have you ever been there?
No, I prey on decent women. Usually after they've made up their minds, I'm a gentleman.
You're making fun of me.
Well, you've already learned more about me than any decent woman has any business knowing. It's time you were getting back to the house.
When we get to El Paso, will we?
I expect we will. A man's been taking forbidden fruit for 2,000 years, and some woman keeps handing it to him. We feed our weaknesses and ignore our strengths.
There were no saddles for the three horses Jubal Wells had left behind. So Myra, Jamie, and Ellie had to ride bareback, each carrying their belongings in a bundle.
We'll take it slow, but there'll be some sore behinds by the time we reach El Paso. I have a tin of sulfur salve in my saddlebag. After dark, all you can strip and sit in the spring runoff.
I intend to do exactly that, and I may not wait until dark.
El Paso, Texas, December 23rd, 1873. Granny Boudlow's boarding house was different, to say the least, but so was Granny herself. The boarding house consisted of an old mission, long abandoned by the Spanish, that sprawled along the north bank of the Rio Grande, no more than a stone's throw from Ciudad Juarez. A Cajun, Granny Boudlow defied description. She had black hair, piercing black eyes, stood several inches under 5 feet, and wouldn't have weighed more than 90 pounds soaking wet. She spoke English, Cajun, and Spanish, and on occasion a mix of all three. It was to Granny Boodlow's Hacienda Grande Nathan and his charges rode in search of rooms. Business had been poor, and they were greeted by Granny herself.
Bonjour, y'all. What you wish?
A room for each of us. You have a place we can stable our horses?
Course not. This look like a horse barn to you.
No, I've seen horse barns in better shape.
Four room, $1 a day, $5 a week, $20 a month. Grub, 50 cents a day.
Here's $140. That's a room for all of us for a month, including grub.
You staying long?
That depends on whether we can find a place for our horses close to here.
Juggins, 2 blocks west.
Get settled in. I'll see to our horses.
When Nathan returned from the livery, he learned that Myra and Ellie were in the kitchen helping Granny bring food to the table. Nathan said nothing, but an hour later, when they returned to their rooms, he felt the need to mention it.
We're paying for rooms and grub. You don't have to work in the kitchen.
She didn't ask us to work in the kitchen. We offered to. Nathan, that poor woman has no help. She's taking care of all of this by herself. She owes the bank $1,200, and she can't pay. The bank is threatening to take this place away from her.
Maybe not. Suppose you put up the $1,200 and buy a half interest.
I don't have $1,200.
I do.
Maybe you didn't hear. I said I don't have $1,200.
I heard you. I'm offering to lend you the money.
Suppose I can't repay it?
Suppose you can't.
I can't take your money.
I was the one who said you and your children should come here. I just want you to have a way to keep a roof over your heads.
Out of guilt for bringing us here.
Look at it like a business investment.
In me? Well, business is business. Let's see, that's $1 for the room and $2 for me for 400 nights. You'd have to stay in El Paso for 13 months to take it out and trade.
Myra, I didn't mean it like that. By God, if I can't lend you money without you becoming a whore to repay it, I'll withdraw the offer. If money does that to you, I like you better when you're broke. I'll learn to live with my guilt.
I know you didn't mean it like that. Nathan, our friendship was the reason I agreed to come here. That and a better chance for Ellie and Jamie. You don't owe me anything, and I don't want to owe you.
Tears came into her eyes.
I know you're doing this because you're gonna ride away, and that's what hurts. I won't take your money to ease your guilt.
I'm not going to ride away for a while.
Not for at least 400 nights?
Well, I can't promise that, but if and when I do, I'll be back. Take the money, Myra.
I'll talk to Granny Boodlow. She has until December 31st. Then the bank will foreclose.
2 days after Christmas, papers were drawn up, and Myra Haight was officially half-owner of Granny Boodlow's Hacienda Grande. It was a move Nathan never regretted, because as Myra began a new life, on the first day of the new year, Nathan's past would force him and his deadly colts back on the path of his old life. Nathan had time on his hands, and not being a drinking man, he began visiting various saloons and gambling. El Paso drew men from both sides of the border, most of them a caliber that suggested they could be hanged on either side of the river. One of these was a Mexican of some status, Manuelito Birdsong. He was armed with a temper of considerable proportions, a bowie knife, and a .31 caliber Colt pocket pistol. The game, draw poker, had been in progress less than an hour in the Star Saloon, and Nathan watched as the Mexican was again about to deal the cards.
This time, deal all mine off the top.
You're implying that I cheat, senor.
I'm not implying, I'm accusing. You dealt my last card off the bottom of the deck. I allow a man one mistake, and you've made yours.
Ben scrambled to get away from the table, but there was no gunplay. Birdsong's hand froze on the gun in his pocket, for Nathan already had him covered.
I think for the sake of your continued good health, you'd better be on your way. Next time you try to draw on me, I'll kill you.
Birdsong got up and left the saloon without a word, but the hate in his eyes warned Nathan that the fiery little gambler wouldn't forget the incident. The barkeep caught his eye and Nathan moved toward the bar. When he got there, the barman shook his head as he polished a glass.
You better watch your back, friend. That little sidewinder's poison mean.
Nathan made his way toward the door, overhearing some talk between two men at a table.
By God, that's Nathan Stone. He's deadly with a Colt, just like forked lightning, with either hand.
Yeah, and he has done some fancy shooting. A gal from Missouri wanted him dead for killing her brother. She hired a pair of gunslingers for an ambush. Stone shot his way out, killed one of the men, and sent the other one and the girl to Missouri State Prison.
Thus the legend of Nathan Stone grew, and so did the number of men who wished to gain a reputation by beating his fast draw. El Paso, Texas, January 1st, 1874. Banker Artemus Stewart had built himself a financial empire in El Paso. He had fond expectations that his only son, Arley, would take the reins when old age forced Artemus to step down as bank president. But Arley, just 22, had a passion for women, whiskey, and cards. He carried a tied-down Colt on his right hip and had gained a reputation of sorts, not for his skill with a gun, but because of the power his father wielded. Arley Stewart soon forgot that men shied clear of him not because they feared his gun, but because they feared his father. The sun was noon high on the first day of the new year when Arley Stewart and three of his friends found Nathan Stone in the arcade saloon playing poker.
Stone! I hear you're quick with a gun. Well, I think I'm faster, and I'm calling you out. I'll be waiting.
You'll have a long wait. Killing ain't a game, boy. Go home.
By God, I'm not a boy. I'm a man, which is more than can be said for you.
Arley, your daddy may be president of the bank, but I'm the sheriff, and I can lock you up.
You can, but then you won't be sheriff no more. I'll have your badge, and you won't find work in this town forking horse apples.
Sheriff Lowell Stark could see what Arley apparently could not. Nathan Stone wasn't a man to talk down to, not by a wet-behind-the-ears kid like Arley Stewart.
Boy, you got one more chance to turn around and walk out of here alive. I have no reason to kill you unless you go for that gun.
Men fought one another to get out of the line of fire. There were beads of sweat on Arley Stewart's brow. He cut his eyes to right and left, but he was alone. There was a sinking feeling in his gut, for he must back up his brag or be forever branded a coward. He made his play, elated as his hand reached the butt of his Colt, for Stone hadn't moved. Wonderingly, Arley stared into the deadly muzzle of Nathan Stone's Colt as smoke still curled from it. As his eyes met Nathan's, he saw compassion there. Arley had just enough time to realize that he was a fool. Nathan Stone had not wanted to kill him.
You saw it, Sheriff. He left me no choice. Are there any charges?
Not as far as I'm concerned, but in case you don't know, his daddy's the tall dog here in El Paso. That kid never got into anything his paw couldn't get him out of. Until now. God only knows what the old man's likely to do. Unless you've got business here, you'd do well to ride on.
Damn it, he drew first. Every man in here saw it.
And every man in here is afraid to cross old Artemus Stewart.
That includes you, I reckon.
It does not. I'll side you if it costs me this badge, but old Artemus is a tyrant. He'll ignore anything I say, and with his money he can hire enough men to whip the Mexican army.
Sheriff Stark knew he wouldn't have to break the news. Artemus Stewart would already know. Stark wanted to know what the old man planned in the way of retaliation and hopefully talk him out of it.
Come in. Damn you, Stark! Drifter kills my boy and you let him walk away. Why is he not in jail?
I can't jail a man for defending himself. Arley forced the fight. He was given a chance to back off and he didn't. I tried to talk sense to him and he wouldn't have it. He asked for what he got.
By God, I'll see you get what you're asking for.
If you're referring to taking this badge, I'm returning it. And you know where you can stick it. I'm through froggy jumping every time you stomp your foot.
Artemus Stewart wasted no time. The three men he sent for now stood before him.
I want you to raise a posse. I'm paying $10 a day per man plus shells and grub. I want Nathan Stone dead, and the man bringing me proof that he is gets $1,000. You understand me?
Yes, sir. Me, Ike, Levi, and how many more?
Dozen if you can find them, and by God, I want him. I don't care if you have to follow him to the ocean in either direction or Canada to the north.
Jubal Wells, Ike Puckett, and Levi Odell left Artemis Stewart's office and began making the rounds of the saloons, seeking men for their posse.
Well, now, that do make it some better. 15 of us after Stone's hide? Being as how we're heading the posse, we ought to have first grab at Stone's belongings after he's been shot dead.
That's how I see it. We'll let the others fight over the bounty on him, while we snag the gold in his pack.
Hell, we're getting paid by the day. After we catch up to Stone and cash in his chips, let's find us a town with a saloon and a whorehouse and hold up for another 2 or 3 weeks. We can tell old Artemis we had to chase Stone all the way to Atlanta. He won't ever know the difference.
Nathan rode back to Granny Boudlow's boarding house. It had become virtually impossible to talk to Myra without Granny listening, so Nathan spoke to them all, Jamie and Ellie included.
The sheriff advised me to ride on. The more I think about it, the more sensible it seems.
The one you shot don't be near as bad as his daddy. If you ride back to town and shoot that old hellion, your troubles be over.
Yeah.
You don't know what the mood is in town. Let Jamie ride in and find out. You were justified in defending yourself. Maybe the sheriff can talk some sense into this Artemis Stewart.
Pah! Nobody talks sense to him. Nobody.
Jamie went into town and came back with a report that struck like a bolt of lightning.
The sheriff quit. Old Mr. Stewart's hiring a posse to kill Nathan. He's paying $10 a day per man with $1,000 to the man that does the killing. And just who do you think's hiring and leading this bunch of killers? Jubal Wells, Ira Puckett, and Levi Odell, that's who. I didn't see him, but everybody's talking about it.
That tells me what I needed to know. No law standing in Stewart's way. And he's got the money to pay a pack of killers to trail me from here to yonder. I better saddle up and ride, getting as much of a start as I can.
But where will you go?
San Antonio, but I don't aim to spend all my time running. I'll set up a few ambushes as I go, and even the odds some.
Oh, I hate this. You will come back, won't you?
When I can. They'll search the town, and the sooner I can get away from here, the better. When Jubal Wells and his amigos see Myra, Jamie, and Ellie, they'll know I've been here. And this is where they'll take my trail.
Like hell, they see nobody but me. And I tell them I never see you. Never hear of you.
Bless you, Granny. When I can safely ride back this way, I will.
Without Jamie knowing, Levi Puckett had seen him when he had ridden in to learn the mood of the town for Nathan. Puckett followed the boy back to Granny's place, and the next morning after the shooting, 15 vigilantes came looking for Nathan Stone. Granny Boudlow tried her best to keep them off Nathan's trail, but it only seemed to make them all the more certain.
I don't know who you're talking of. Who's this Stone?
Don't bother lying to us, old woman. We know he was here.
Come on, he must have headed east.
They rode away in the direction Nathan had gone.
Oh, damn it. He didn't even get one day ahead of him.
Myra Haight strained her eyes into the rising sun, watching the dust cloud grow smaller, knowing that Nathan was somewhere ahead of them. He was just one man, and there were 15 killers on his trail. Knuckling the tears from her eyes, she turned back to the house. Jubal Wells, Ira Puckett, and Levi Odell rode at the head of the band of killers they had recruited. They were in high good humor, with most of them being more than a little drunk. Artemis Stewart had been generous with money for food and supplies, and the vigilantes led 3 pack horses, one of them almost totally loaded with quart bottles of whiskey.
I got it all figured out. It ain't the drinking that kills a man, it's the sobering up. So you just don't never sober up.
By God, that ain't nothing but the truth. And we can stretch old Stewart's bounty hunt out for as long as his money lasts. Staying drunk all the way.
Stone's got a dog with him. Let's be looking for dog tracks.
Hell, I'm so drunk I can't see horse tracks.
Well, no more whiskey in the morning then. Save it for after supper so you can sleep it off. This ain't no Shorthorn we're after. He could double back, belly down with a Winchester, and ambush the hell out of us.
The wind had a chilly bite, and far to the west, a gray band of clouds had swept over the setting sun.
By this time tomorrow night, there'll be rain. Then we got no horse tracks, dog tracks, nothing. How do we know we're still on his trail?
We don't. But have you ever known it to rain all over Texas at the same time? We ride on till the rain lets up, and then we circle till we find the trail again. Damn it! Don't none of you jaybirds know nothing about tracking?
Southeast Texas, January 3rd, 1874. Nathan surveyed the back trail and found no sign of pursuit, but he knew the vigilantes would be coming after him. He would stay ahead of them, and over the course of a week or two, attempt to wear them out. By noon, the Thunderheads had moved in from the west on a rising wind, swallowing the January sun. When the rain came, it was cold, but Nathan rode on, taking advantage of the daylight. The farther he rode during the storm, the farther his pursuers would be riding blind, seeking to pick up his trail. With darkness just minutes away, he reined up beside a creek at the foot of a steep slope. There was enough of a rock overhang to provide shelter to him and Cotton Blossom. Others had sought shelter here, and someone had thoughtfully gathered some firewood. Nathan built a small cook fire, extinguishing it as soon as possible so there would be fuel for a breakfast fire. It promised to be a perfectly miserable night as the storm grew in intensity, making tracking harder for the vigilantes.
Damn it! We should have rode on until we found some shelter before we laid up for the night.
You ain't likely to find a hotel any closer than San Antone. If a little rain bothers you, maybe you should have stayed in the saloons in El Paso. It ain't too late to ride back, and that goes for any of the rest of you.
I ain't bothered by the rain, but I'd as soon be riding as sitting here like a half-drowned rooster.
Well, by God, you'll be a dead rooster if you ride blind into Stone's camp. It ain't likely he'll ride on in a storm like this.
Not the least bit likely. And there's nothing he'd like better than for us to come stumbling after him through the rain, not knowing where he is.
You don't know everything, Wells. When the rain's done, we still won't know where the hombre is till he starts making tracks again. He could hole up and us be right on him before we know he's there.
I ain't denying that with all you being owl-eyed. No more whiskey except at supper time. And the next scutter that ends up falling down drunk gets booted out.
Nathan was 3 days out of El Paso before he eventually sighted the dust of the men following him. Waiting until it was dark, he left his pack horse picketed and rode back to scout the enemy camp. It was time he knew just how many men were on his trail. The wind was out of the west, and so he was downwind from his pursuers. He left the Gruya far enough away so that the animal wouldn't nicker and reveal his presence. Never knowing what might develop, he took his Winchester. The bunch had obligingly established their camp near a creek, along which there was abundant growth, and Nathan crept along it from the north. He easily identified the troublesome trio from New Mexico, Wells, Puckin, and Odell, and counted 12 more men he didn't recognize. They were 3 loaded pack saddles, proof that Artemus Stewart was sparing no expense. The coffee pot hung over the fire from an iron spider, and that gave Nathan an idea. It never hurt to keep the enemy on the defensive, seeing to it that they slept uneasily, never knowing for sure where their adversary was. He waited until Levi Odell tipped the whiskey bottle and fired, shattering the bottle in Odell's face. His next shot sent the coffee pot flying, while a 3rd and 4th shots sent the horses galloping in a mad run down the creek. Nathan retreated while pandemonium broke loose in the vigilante camp. Men cursed, rifles and Colts roared, and several men who had sought the safety of darkness were drawing fire from their companions.
Damn it! Hold your fire!
Help me! I'm bleeding to death and I can't see!
The horses is gone. Let's go look for them.
I can't! I got glass in my eyes!
It's so dark you can't see your hand in front of your face! We'll have to wait for morning.
That was the truth, for thick clouds hid the moon and stars. Nathan reached his horse, mounted, and rode back to his own camp, knowing he wouldn't be followed. In a showdown, they might surround him or ride him down, but in the war of nerves, he had a definite edge. All he had to do was stay ahead, ride back under the cover of darkness, and just worry the hell out of them. Nathan's pursuers spent an uneasy night, awaking to a chill west wind and a mass of low-hanging clouds that promised more rain. Nobody was in a mood for breakfast until the horses had been found, and they set off on foot. With the cold wind at their backs, the animals had drifted more than 2 miles. Breakfast was late, for they had but one coffee pot, and the hole Nathan had put in it let it hold only half as much water as it should, so some of the men had to wait for a second pot to boil. Before they were finished with breakfast, a drizzling rain set in. In silence, they mounted and rode out, wet, cold, and hating one another. More than one man silently vowed that Nathan Stone would pay. But there would be unpleasant surprises ahead beyond anything their limited imaginations might conceive. While there was little shelter in East Texas, one man could find a rock overhang, the undercut bank of an arroyo, or some means of sleeping dry. 15 men, however, would have no dry bed, perhaps no fire, and unless they had another pot, very little coffee. As Nathan rode on, the rain became more intense. His pursuers had barely found his trail following the first rain, and now they were about to lose it again. Adding to their woes, after last night, they would be forced to take turns standing watch, for they knew not when Nathan Stone would visit them again. Reaching a spring at the foot of a rise, Nathan reined up. The wind had risen, and there was a blowing rain out of the west. Nathan found shelter on the lee side of some rocks and built his supper fire. When he had eaten and fed Cotton Blossom, he put out the fire, saving some of the wood for the morning. He then rolled in his blankets with a square of canvas over them as protection from the blowing rain and slept soundly. Half a day's ride behind, however, his pursuers had no shelter, and for a lack of dry firewood, were chewing on jerked beef.
God damn such weather. I'd give a day's pay for some hot coffee.
I'd give a day's pay if I didn't have to listen to all this crying.
Well, hell, with old Stewart footing a bit, we should have bought us a tent. If I'd wanted to sit on my hunkers in the rain eating jerked beef, picking shards out of my face, I could have joined the Union Army.
Well, if it'll make you feel better, I cut your pay to $8 a month, and you can make believe this is the Union Army.
Under cover of darkness, with an overcast sky and continuing rain, Nathan again visited the vigilante camp. He ventilated the coffee pot again, and with some well-placed shots again stampeded the horses. By the time the men on watch got their Winchesters into play, Nathan had already done his damage. While confusion reigned, he mounted his horse and rode back to his own camp. Twice he had shot up their camp, and either time he could have killed 2 or 3 men. He had nothing against them, and he still hoped that if the trail proved treacherous enough, most of them would give up the chase. His shooting had been close enough that they had to know he had spared their lives. But how much longer could he continue to spare them? The weather cleared up, and after the 10th day on the trail, all his pursuers were still there. Obviously, some of them would have to be hurt or killed to make believers of the rest. On the 11th day, an unexpected opportunity presented itself in a most unusual manner. Having seen no threat from the men on their back trail, Cotton Blossom had taken to ranging far ahead. On this particular day, he doubled back. The sun was several hours high, and if there was danger ahead, Nathan wanted to face it before dark. He rode warily ahead, following Cotton Blossom. After not more than 2 miles, Nathan reined up, and taking his Winchester, he dismounted. There was a rise ahead, and using underbrush for cover, Nathan crept to the crest of it. Below, there was an Indian camp. For the time and place, they almost had to be Comanche. In Nathan's mind, a devious plan was taking shape. He waited until he could see a distant plume of dust that told him his pursuers were almost within striking distance. Raising his Winchester to his shoulder, he fired 4 times among the Indians, careful that his slugs didn't find human targets. His shooting had the desired effect, for every Indian with a horse lit out toward the brush from which the shots had come. Nathan kicked the Gruya into a fast gallop, back the way he had come, toward the pursuing vigilantes. Once he had some brush and undergrowth between him and the Comanches, he rode north. Before the Comanches reached the point where Nathan had changed directions, they were able to see the oncoming vigilantes. They galloped straight toward them. Reaching a rise from which he could see the drama, Nathan dismounted, resting his lathered horse. Even from a distance, he could hear the terrified cries of the vigilantes. Making no attempt to fight, virtually falling over one another, they wheeled their horses and rode for their lives. Nathan rode north until he was well past the Comanche camp. Then he rode east until he found a suitable camp for the night. Far to the west, Jubal Wells and his vigilantes were trying to evade the Comanches.
My God, there must have been 50 of the varmints. I wonder if the rest of the boys got away.
You knew they didn't. Hell, they was ahead of us, and they're the reason we got away.
We ain't got away yet. If they're Comanches, they may be right here at first light, beating the bushes and looking for us.
Come first light, Jubal Wells and six nervous companions looked warily around before leaving the brush in which they had concealed themselves. They hadn't ridden far when they found the scalped and mutilated bodies of their companions. All eight had been stripped of everything, including their boots.
Lord God, I hope they wasn't alive when them varmints done this.
They rode on, anxious to be away from the grisly scene. Nathan arose at first light, and with the Comanches in mind, decided against a breakfast fire. He and Cotton Blossom shared some jerked beef, and they took the trail. Nathan believed they had come more than 500 miles. Unless he rode far south to one of the border towns, San Antonio would be the closest. He was unsure as to how many of his pursuers the Comanches had accounted for, but he suspected he would still be outnumbered considerably. On the plains, they might eventually surround him, but in town, they would hardly attempt it. He could take them individually, or even two at a time, but not all of them at once. Nathan soon discovered what his pursuers had in mind. Surveying his back trail, he could see two rising clouds of dust, one to the north and another to the south. They'd split their forces, planning to box him in on the open plains ahead. He had no way of knowing how far he was from the nearest town, where he'd have a chance to take a stand. As far as he could see, there wasn't enough cover to hide a prairie dog. And it was cold comfort to tell himself that when he was within range of their Winchesters, they were within range of his. But he couldn't properly defend himself from two attacking forces, even if he had cover. He rode desperately on, only too well aware that his Gruya and the pack horse couldn't maintain such a gait for more than a few miles. He had but one chance, and it was to swing due south. One immediate advantage of his change in direction was that the riders attempting to flank him to the north lost their quarry. Eventually, they might flank him to the east, but only by hard riding, which would exhaust their horses. He still had the riders who had been flanking him to the south, and all they had to do was keep coming because they had seen and understood his move. Slugs began kicking up dust to his right. Soon they would be within range. Suddenly the Gruya slammed a hind leg deep into a hole. The animal stumbled and stopped, pitching Nathan from the saddle. He got to his feet and snatched the Winchester from its saddle boot. He wasn't sure where Cotton Blossom was, but the dog couldn't help him. Slugs sang over his head. One tore into his back above the left shoulder blade. Knocked to his knees, Nathan stumbled to his feet in time to take a second slug in the left thigh. There was no cover, no protection, so he bellied down and began returning the fire. He had the satisfaction of seeing two of his attackers tumble from their saddles. That had a profound effect on the third rider, Jubal Wells. Jubal dropped back out of range, but the riders who had been flanking Nathan to the north had circled and were now coming at him from the east. Nathan dared not focus his attention on them because Wells would have a clear shot at him. But just as the four riders began to fire, a deadly rifle cut loose somewhere beyond them. Three of them were shot out of their saddles, driving the fourth man straight toward Nathan, who cut him down with a single shot. Jubal Wells watched helplessly as the distant rifleman killed three of the vigilantes and as Levi rode headlong into Nathan Stone's fire.
Damn you, Stone! Today you drawed all the high cards, but I owe you and I pay my debts!
Not believing his good fortune, Nathan waited, his Winchester ready. A single horseman approached from the east, his Winchester crossed his saddle. Still out of rifle range, he reined up and greeted Nathan.
You out there! Are you alive?
Mostly thanks to you! I'm friendly most of the time.
As the stranger approached, Nathan could scarcely believe his eyes. The man was young, slender, and well over 6 feet. His hair was dark, as was his sweeping mustache. He was expensively dressed and carried a pearl-handled Colt on each hip. Before conversing any further with Nathan, he dismounted, went to the gruya, and extracted the horse's hind leg from the hole.
That leg'll be a mite sore for a day or two. He's a smart one, coming up short when his leg was caught. Many a jughead would have busted the leg. How bad are you hit?
Shoulder and thigh. I've been hit there before, but it never gets any easier. I'm Nathan Stone.
And I'm John Fisher. My friends call me King. I have a range about 10 miles from here near Eagle Pass. I also have an old Mexicano housekeeper who's good with bullet wounds. You need some patching up, my friend.
I'd be obliged.
Fisher brought Nathan's horse, and with some difficulty, he mounted. As they rode south, Fisher caught up Nathan's pack horse.
Seems I've heard of you. Maybe from Ben Thompson?
I know Ben. I met him across the border, and we barely made it back to Texas. Mexicans shooting at us every jump.
By God, you do know a little varmint. I see him maybe twice a year, usually after he's been cut or shot up and looking for a place to heal. We killed all last night in a poker game in an Uvalde saloon. I tried to get Thompson to come to the ranch for a couple days, but he wanted to ride to Austin, God only knows why. Ain't got no friends there.
Last time I saw him, he was dealing Monty in a saloon in Ellsworth, Kansas. There was gun trouble thanks to his brother, Billy.
He's a damn little fool that can't hold his whiskey. He's not welcome in my place. Someday, when Ben's not around to save his worthless hide, somebody will fill that little sidewinder full of lead. I'd have done it myself if it wasn't Ben's brother.
Eagle Pass, Texas, January 17, 1874. When they reached a crossroads, a sign caught Nathan's eye. It said, "This is King Fisher's Road. Take the other." At the gate of Fisher's Ranch, there hung a long slab of pine with the name Pendencia burned into it. Next to it was the distinctive outline of a crown. The ranch house was of adobe, long and low.
We'll go in and get Milagro started patching you up, and I'll see to your horses. Can you manage?
Yes, but it'll be slow.
See to his wounds, Milagros, por favor.
Milagros looked more Indian than Mexican, and without a word, she led Nathan to a bedroom and pointed to the bed. Gratefully, Nathan sank down. It took but a few minutes for Milagros to cleanse the wounds with hot water and apply a fiery disinfectant. She then soaked thick cloth pads with more of the disinfectant, binding a pad tight against the entry and exit wounds.
Gracias, senora.
Milagros covered Nathan with a blanket and left the room.